This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. We will officially greet winter at 11:48 p.m. on Monday, December 21st. And that brings to mind a wise comment from actor-writer Steve Martin, and I quote, "A day without sunshine is like, you know, night." If you're one of those Michiganders whose mood slides downhill as we slide into winter, you've got plenty of company. And it's all tied to the relationship among light, mood, and melatonin. We wanted to talk about seasonal affective disorder. So for that, we say hello to Asa Janssen, who is with the Center for the History of Emotions at Queen Mary University of London. But she joins us where they know a little something about winter darkness. She is in Sweden. Welcome to Stateside, Asa.
Thank you, Cindy. Thanks for having me.
Is it only a scant 31 years ago that the term seasonal affective disorder was actually unveiled?
Yes. So it's, as far as psychiatric disorders go, it's a very recent one. It hasn't been around for that long. However, people have, for much longer felt sad and depressed in winter. But as a medical disorder, it's a very new one. It has a very short history.
It was a research paper by a South African psychiatrist, right, Dr. Norman Rosenthal. How did he put these pieces of this jigsaw together into a real syndrome with a real name and a real treatment?
Well, it's a fascinating history, really, especially as far as psychiatric disorders go. It has a very unique history. So Norman Rosenthal, he came from South Africa originally and moved to New York in the 1970s, where he discovered as winter came along and the days got shorter and colder, both him and his wife discovered that they felt depressed and lethargic, found it difficult to do their work and so on. Around this time, he met someone who was doing research on sort of sleep patterns and melatonin and mood, Alfred Louis, who is with the National Institute for Health in the US. And they started talking and found that they had quite a lot in common and sort of started off on this research. Is there actually some sort of correlation between people feeling depressed, actually having sort of an emotional disorder in winter, and the lack of light? And they advertised in a local paper to get people for their study and so on. And it sort of continued. They experimented with bright light as a treatment. It was a disorder that was very much researched in the laboratory from the start, which is very unusual for psychiatric disorders. And also the fact that the psychiatrists involved were quite active also as subjects, sort of, measuring their own melatonin levels. It's a sort of self-experiment that, some historians would recognize from the early modern period.
It is interesting because it would be very hard, I would say, to apply good science, strict scientific method for things happening in your mind. This is quite the exception.
Well, this is the great dilemma of psychiatry, isn't it? And I know that there are psychiatrists who would disagree, but it's what's still being debated and has been since psychiatry started to emerge as a modern science in the 19th century. How do you connect these ideas, these theories that we have about the mind and the symptoms that we perceive or that patients experience? How do you link that to sound science? How do you find biological basis for these disorders? Obviously, there are other psychiatric disorders where there has been some advancement in this area, but SAD is very unusual in that it had a biological basis from the beginning. It was researched, as I said, in the laboratory, and it's still, the research is very sound. Also, the fact that there was a targeted treatment from the beginning, and the fact that the treatment is linked to the biological basis, the etiology of the disorder, makes it very unique.
Also, what is at stake in putting a label, identifying seasonal affective disorder as a disorder? Why do we need to label it a disorder in the first place? I'm wondering, does it create a stigma?
Well, that's a very good question. I think there's a lot at stake, in naming any emotional or behavioral pattern as a disorder, as you suggest. But there are both positive and negative aspects. The positives are, of course, that by naming disorders in psychiatry, as in any branch of medicine, we can hopefully find the correct treatment to help someone feel better. However, in the case of SAD, that's also been a little problematic because the treatment that seems to really work and that's been part of the research from the beginning is light therapy, which, as one of the scientists who have been involved have suggested, themselves or suggested himself, light can't really be patented. There isn't an awful lot of money to make from it. So that's been a bit of a problem in terms of people accessing the treatment. It's not something that pharmaceutical companies, you know, want to really spend a lot of money researching since they can't patent it. But still, there are positives with naming a disorder in this way, in the sense that people can, you know, get an understanding, perhaps feel that they can get an understanding of what's wrong with them, get some medical recognition and hopefully treatment. However, you know, one might ask, do we actually need to call something a disorder in order for someone to get help?
Yes.
Of course, there is the issue of stigma, as you mentioned, although perhaps that's partly a problem with the attitude we have in general in society towards psychiatry and towards mental suffering. But, you know, one of the things that historians of emotions and medicine do tend to look at is specifically this, you know, how did we come to this point where, you know, where we diagnose unpleasant feelings as illnesses? Because it hasn't always been like that, not in the sense that it is today. And I think there may be certainly be a danger, not just in terms of stigma, but also in terms of flexibility of treatment and treatment options. So if we call something a disorder, we say that it's medical, it then requires a medical treatment. But different things might work for different people. And perhaps, you know, one might argue that you should be able to access whatever help and support you need, regardless of whether you have a medical label.
You know, it strikes me that when you think of other mood disorders that are commonly known and experienced, let's say generalized anxiety disorder or depression, it strikes me that those are kind of internal causes, where seasonal affective disorder is more externally caused. Does that make it tend to be taken less seriously, if you know what I mean?
Perhaps yes and no. I mean, the very idea that depression and anxiety are internal disorders is something that sort of, that hasn't always been the prevailing view. With depression, it's gone back and forth a little bit. So in the mid-20th century, sort of more social explanations were quite popular, or psychosocial, I suppose you could call them. Whereas in the 19th century, biological explanations were quite popular, and again, they are now today. To be honest, I mean, it's a difficult question, actually. That's why I don't really know how to answer it, because I'm not quite sure. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I think that the fact that it has a scientific basis should, regardless of the etiology, so regardless of how we think that the illness comes about, should make it more plausible, more legitimate in a sense. However, in the current climate, where we do very much talk about mental disorders as internal, where we don't really take the sort of the environment into account as much as we did, say, you know, 30, 40 years ago, perhaps, that is no longer the case. So indeed, I think you might be onto something. I think that might certainly be the case that, because, you know, we all suffer through winter, don't we? Why do some people suffer worse than others? Could be seen as potentially as a sign of weakness. So, but I don't know, it's difficult. And it has a lot to do with, you know, how we, society at present and medicine in general, you know, views psychiatric and specifically emotional disorders. And that's something that's changed so much throughout time. And I'm sure it's going to continue to change.
Asa, as someone who has gotten her PhD studying the history of psychiatry, the history of emotions, what role do you think that SAD plays in the larger picture of human disorders?
Wow, that's quite a question. I think there's a lot of positives to be learned from it, from the history of this disorder. One is the fact that, as I mentioned earlier, psychiatrists who were involved in the research from day one had a very sort of open-minded approach to it, and also participated themselves to some extent as subjects, you know, measuring normal melatonin levels and so on. And indeed, it was the fact that Norman Rosenthal first experienced sort of winter depression when he moved to New York that got him interested in the disorder. Also, patients have been very active in the process as well from the start. And that's also quite unusual. Unusual in the sense that patients have been active with a lot of agency, not just as sort of subjects or as, you know, psychiatrists diagnosing them and saying, you know, this is what you have. So in the UK, for example, there's a patient advocacy group called SADA, Seasonal Affective Disorder Association, who've been instrumental in, you know, trying to bring about more awareness within the psychiatric community and the medical community in the UK about this disorder, about access to treatment and so on. In that sense, I suppose it's a modern or almost postmodern disorder in many ways. both the slightly different role of psychiatrists and scientists in the shaping of this disorder and the very active sort of positive role of patients, if you like, means that there's certainly lessons to learn, I think, for psychiatry in general, and, you know, specifically in regards to the patients who are given the label actually actively participating in, you know, shaping treatment and research.
It certainly is helping us at least get a greater awareness about the relationship between the environment and our brains, isn't it?
Well, yes, absolutely. But I do also want to come back to what I said earlier, that I do still wonder whether is it necessary that in order to understand, you know, why some people suffer in winter, why some people suffer emotionally in various ways, whether it's endogenous, whether, you know, it's something that starts internally or whether it's triggered by our environment or so on. Is it absolutely necessary for this research to be so strictly medical? Is it necessary for the treatment options to be so strictly medical? But again, here I think we can learn something from SAD too, because the favored treatment and the treatment that actually works, you could, I suppose, in a sense, say that it's, while it might be a medical treatment, it's certainly a bit unconventional because, you know, it's very bright light. Basically, mm-hmm. it's not a pill that you take, or it's not even a form of therapy.
Well, I wouldn't object if my physician prescribed a good trip to the Bahamas in the middle of February to help me get through that. I would not object to that in the slightest.
Well, some SAD patients actually do, who live in the Northern Hemisphere. They make that sort of a rule to try to do that every winter, because otherwise they simply won't get through the winter period.
Asa Janssen is with the Center for the History of Emotions at Queen Mary University of London, and she is working right now in Sweden. It was very interesting getting the merits of all of your study, Asa. Thank you so much for being with us on Stateside.
Thank you for having me, Cindy.